Welcome to this week's episode of Whiskey Neat, spirited conversations with interesting people. I am your host, Christopher Hart. Today, we're back at the incredible Stogie's Lounge on Westheimer here in Houston, easily Houston's number one cigar lounge. That's not a slight to anyone else. It's just one of the most classic, iconic cigar lounges in Houston. And actually, the guy we talked about that you didn't know who he was, I'm hoping that we'll be doing that here at the end of the month or at the beginning of August. So we'll talk about that off air. Today is more for me than it is for you. I'm such a huge fan of these guys in every possible fathomable way that it meant the world to me that all of them could drop what they're doing at the I hate to say drop of a hat because they just said drop, but at the drop of a hat and come on the show today. Ian Berry and Cruz, no last name, like Madonna, and Jeremiah Butler of B&B Butchers, great friends, hosts of Smoking and Toasting. Jeremiah, obviously being the beverage director for B&B Butchers, is very well known within the industry here in Houston. That place is killing it on the meat front, which is a very important front to be killing it on, and the spirits front. I mean, if you're a Scotch fan, they're one of the few places in Houston that you can find not one, but two different 50-year-old single malt scotches, both Balvenie and Glenfiddich, and they are worthy of your attention. I'm a huge fan. This week's show, as always, is sponsored by Chelato Distill Artisan Spirits. You hear me talking about them every week. Leader in premium artisan products like Bunahabhain, Deanston, Lecheg, Tobermory, Baines, Black Bottle, and Scottish Leader. You can pick up the entire line at your local liquor store, or if you are a retailer, reach out to your local United Wine and Spirits rep, in Texas, at least. Belmead, another great sponsor of ours. This week's episode is also brought to you by Belmead Bourbon. Aged to perfection, Belmead's High Rye Bourbon portfolio offers a variety of taste-tempting expressions, including their award-winning Sherry, Madeira, Cognac cask finishes, as well as their classic small batch bourbon and the brand new Cask Strength Reserve. Of course, which we didn't get to today, which we might be drinking off-air, this show is also brought to you by Balcones. In 2008, Balcones was nothing more than an idea driven by passion to create something original and authentic, and they're the second oldest distillery in Texas and arguably the most successful. They breathed new life into Texas whiskey, earning them worldwide recognition for their products. You can pick up their whiskeys at your local liquor store and your retailer. And if you're a retailer, reach out to your Southern Glazers Wine and Spirits rep. Before we get to our last sponsor, I want to say a couple more things. Please rate and review the show. Go to iTunes, Stitcher, iHeartRadio. It's on all podcast platforms. Give us a rate and review. It's important that we get your feedback. If you have anything negative to say, send it to me directly. As always, I will just trash it and ignore it completely. It'll eat away at me inside, but you know I love you regardless. One last sponsor. And then I want to mention something that's happening at the end of this month on premise, because I love to support you guys. Sagamore Rye. Today's production is finally brought to you by award-winning Baltimore-based distillery, Sagamore Rye Distillery, home of the world's best rye whiskey. We're huge fans. You know, I think Sagamore is definitely fairly new to market. We've been huge supporters of them. Our unfiltered rye has received, you know, when you do barrel picks, sometimes you're loved by some, sometimes you're not loved. So far, we've received nothing but universal feedback of how fantastic the 110 proof Sagamore rye pick has been. And there are several in Houston. Please, please, please go out there. You've got Ricky's Liquor in Spring. Ryan's Liquor, I think, got a portion of that. There's several places in Houston that have done Sagamore rye 110 proof picks that are absolutely fantastic. Go get a bottle, try it out, and for $55, I promise you, you won't be disappointed. Lastly, B&B Butchers. They've got a Woodford Reserve dinner being done on July 30th. Jeremiah's here. We talk about it off air. Our episode kind of ran a little long. But we've been promoting dinners for a long time. They're the best opportunity for anyone to go to a place, have a fantastic meal, and try through different brands, or, you know, depending on the dinner, if it's a Woodford brand or a Glenmorangie dinner, try a whiskey, try their portfolio, taste through a few spirits, have a good time, have a good meal, and pay one flat price out the door. I didn't ask you this beforehand, but where can they, do they just need a call? call the restaurant, call B&B Butchers. On July 30th, they're going to be having a Woodford Reserve dinner. I'm a huge fan of Brown-Forman. I've talked about them plenty of times on the show. I think it's about time we definitely do an Old Forester dinner soon because I'm a huge fan of their rye. But call B&B Butchers. 45 spots. 45 spots. Call the restaurant. Book your dinner there. B&B Butchers is one of the best restaurants in Houston to have a meal and to drink spirits. What's not to like? Take your wife. Make it a night. Get, you know, put the kids to bed early and enjoy yourself. So I think that covers everything. It's long. Cheers.
I just have to sound like myself, and this is a part of my golden tones.
You know something about you before Jeremiah says hello. I know he was chiming. He was about to. I noticed this about you, and I've seen it on many other podcasts that you guys have done. When you talk with that mic, you bounce your head a lot like a newscaster. You go, my chocolatey tones. Like you're very you fit the part.
I'm animated. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you look like you're reporting live from the scene of the crime.
I have to do something. I'm used to most of the time when I have a mic in my hand, I have a guitar in my hand too, so I have something else to fidget with.
How many hands do you have?
Most of the time when I'm on a mic, sorry.
Oh, okay.
That makes sense. But even if I'm not actually playing the guitar, having it in my hand is a prop, you know?
Yeah.
That's all right. So when I do karaoke, I like to have that inflatable guitar because it makes me feel more at home.
More relaxed.
Yeah.
The motions. Well, thanks so much for coming on, guys. Ian and Cruz have been on before. Cruz, this is your third visit. You guys, hopefully one day we'll have an Alan Denny style rivalry over who's on the show more.
That's true. Ian, I have been on one time more.
He has been on once more than me. I'm going to pod crash one day.
And Jeremiah, brother, yes. Long time no see. We talked
Absolutely.
About you several times.
Yes,
I
yes.
actually forgot your name one podcast. We were you know, 6 or 12 drinks in, and I was like, oh, I love this guy. And I was like, what's the guy's name? I was like, the guy. Jeremiah. It took me a minute in the moment, you know, when you.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think the first time that I really remember, like, the weird, like, universal connection, we were recording the show in the butcher shop at B&B with y'all's show.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And you made the Whiskey Bass reference. And they were like you were in the comments and you said something about Whiskey Bass. And they were like, sure, I guess whiskey. And that, like, and so I chimed in and was like, no, that's a reference to Whiskey Bass.
Oh, right.
Yeah,
right.
Like at that moment, I was like, okay, I have to, like, there has to be, like, we have to connect at some point.
We have to meet this guy. Person.
Well, they had been talking about you for quite some time, and of course, I was all over it, right? And then that episode that you were on, that first one I watched you in, you didn't know this, but we became soulmates immediately. Like, I felt you through the monitor at work, and you didn't know I was watching. It was like almost like when you're
that seems
love.
A little stalkerish.
Yeah. You're in love from afar.
You let me have my moment. Come on, man.
And then when we finally got together for the 100th episode, it was like what was like 6 hours of drunken
that,
love.
Man, that it was a like crazy.
It was 5 hours of drunken love and 1 hour of Jeremiah and Ian's buddy Mark talking about the lines for beer taps.
Oh sure,
mixed drinks. Yeah.
And how they worked for cocktails.
Yes.
Yeah, we call that tantric podcasting. By the way,
it was wonderful. It was wonderful. Yeah, yeah. Nice. You know, I consulted Sting before we started it. It was great. Yeah,
nice.
No, well, you know, we just had just a couple of weeks ago. Ian was out, and Jeremiah. Took his place on the show, and we called it the Jeremiah Show, which I thought
was
interesting
just for the
title.
Record.
Sure,
but if you call this one the Jeremiah Show, Ian and I are going to feel a little slighted.
So. That's right.
Oh, I see. No, definitely not. I now that I've already said it out loud, I kind of like the name Tantric Podcasting.
There you go.
I like that.
So I know that your show, Smoking and Toasting. For those who don't know, Smoking and Toasting was the first spirits podcast in Houston. You guys have been going on for 3 years now.
Going on.
Yeah.
Three
I always years? Count it in episodes because we're like 147.
Yeah.
But I always count it. And then I have to go back and go, okay.
And that's once a week. So
yeah.
that counts
up
pretty quick.
With only a few, you know, holidays,
exceptions.
That's crazy. Yeah. So well, the first one that I was with you guys for the first Whiskeys on the World, that was what, episode 12? Maybe?
Oh, yeah. It was very early.
Wow.
Yeah.
Whiskeys of the World.
That was
a long time
ago.
It was such a long time ago. I was thin.
I had more hair.
Another time. Yeah.
I very, very briefly met you at that.
That's correct. Yeah.
Just in passing.
And we ended up
got a card
in the cigar lounge about 10 floors up from where the original. Oh, yeah.
It was like a 3-hour tour just to get to the cigar lounge.
you mean the outdoor like roof area?
Mm-hmm.
Which was awesome. Awesome area.
Phenomenal.
It took a bit to get there, but
yeah.
It was a bit of a labyrinth.
You know that scene in Spinal Tap where they're wandering around lost under the stage? That's kind of what it was like getting there.
I definitely felt like I was in some places I shouldn't have been that day.
Oh, for sure. So you guys have been doing it now 3 years. Jeremiah, you are now, I know quite a bit has happened in your world the past year.
Yeah.
So what's your official title? Is it still the same?
So I'm the beverage director for B&B Butchers and Restaurants. There's a lot going
Plural.
On. So mostly my function at this point is obviously we're so busy. Is just B&B. We have the lemon, the BB Lemons that we just opened the new one in Montrose.
Sure.
That's kind of Monique's baby, cocktail wise. Which is, I don't know if you've seen any of it, but she does an amazing job. Incredibly picturesque. Really
delicious.
I saw
the episode you guys did at B&B.
Yeah, she was great.
It was windy, but it was gorgeous.
Yeah, they do a lot more crafty. We try to be a little more pure spirit
Ford,
focused.
Sure.
But man, she does these amazing infusions. She makes her own limoncello. Like, man, she's absolutely killing it over there. And then we also just opened BB Italia not too long ago. And we just upgraded their whiskey list. So there's a lot more there than there was if you haven't been there for a few weeks. They have a lot more of the brown flow in these days.
Well, B&B's been around for quite some time and made waves, both for like Restaurant Week, in which you guys are raising hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Yeah, that's crazy. And coming up.
To one of the few places in Houston to find not one, but two different 50-year-old single malt scotches. Couple 40s in there as well.
Yeah, a couple 40s, couple 30 pluses. So
decent whiskey selection. And you guys, of course, bacon three ways.
I mean, yeah, anything I mean. Three ways, and it's always better with bacon,
That bacon is so good.
It was one of those things like I couldn't have predicted. When you get a job somewhere, you think I like this place, and I bought into the culture pretty early. But like number one, just the ride. You can't predict. Like we have still not plateaued, which is something as a restaurant. We just had our 4-year anniversary, and to still be kind of angled upward as far as like sales and what
sure,
we're doing
sure.
is really cool in Houston.
You haven't screwed it up yet. It's not the
no,
first one
I mean, and
mind,
I try really hard to screw things up. I do, but no, I mean it's been awesome, and the response, and it's actually been kind of nice on the whiskey front. As we've grown, and Cruz and I talked about allocations and stuff last time when I did the show with him, it's pretty funny because we've grown and we're like, we kind of did some things with our liquor purveyors and, you see it gets better and better. You can buy barrels because you have more locations.
Sure.
You're thinking, awesome, I can get more Blantons. I can get these allocations. I got more buying power. And that is absolutely not the case. The barrel thing, yes. But, man, it's been a lot of fun. We started doing barrels. I've got a Whistle Pig coming. I've got our own.
Done several Hudsons.
Hudson.
Huge William Grant supporters here on the show.
Yeah.
You turned me on to that
huge
4
William
grain.
Grant supporters as well. Yeah, the Hudson
on,
4 grain.
On one of the shows, and I always have a bottle of that at my house.
Yeah, that's the first barrel I ever bought. After I'd kind of talked to people about it, and learning the process of buying barrels has been really exciting. Like going through and like learning how to pick a barrel that's not for your own personal consumption is kind of, an interesting experience.
Now, for you, that means finding something that's not, 140 proof, right?
Yeah, well, I mean...
I know you like the big
I like the purity, I do. I think there's a character to it. And don't get me wrong, it's not to say that something like a Basil Hayden's is a phenomenal juice.
Sure.
I just, for me personally, I like a little anger,
I took my wife to dinner at B&B last night and enjoyed the Elijah Craig... I enjoyed the barrel. I enjoyed some sips
some of the
from
barrel.
The barrel. But I mean, it's just like tasting that and thinking that must have been an awesome experience choosing that. I don't know how many other things you tasted.
Did
but
you guys
wow,
do
what
in-market?
You landed on?
Yeah. I didn't go there for this one. For Hudson, I went to Hudson.
Carrie, huge Heaven Hill. I mean, also a huge Heaven Hill supporter, huge fan.
Absolutely,
Carrie Craft. She is killing it.
Yes,
in the role, and we also did two Elijah Craig picks. One we originally slated for an on-premise account, and their long story health issues. They're not doing the barrel, so We're doing one for the Whiskey Social this year that we'll give away the whole barrel, and then do one for HBS as well.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, so excellent. Huge Elijah Craig. I mean, listen, where else are you going to find a 9 to 12-year-old bourbon, Kentucky bourbon, for $28?
Oh, yeah.
And I that's mean, our price, it's, right? It's your amazing, price is even yeah. better than that.
Absolutely.
Our well, premise, it's like $24. It's amazing.
And it's the thing about, I mean, for me, with Elijah Craig and picking the barrel, number one, it was a no-brainer. Just there's such a joy to work with. But to me, like, I don't know. Like, I like whiskeys with stories. I'm all about spirits in general, you know, stories. Like, I try and find that. as often as possible, even in the spirits that we keep in the back bar, spirits I bring on the show, I try and find stuff that has a cool
stuff in my house, yeah,
a story, you know. I'm not saying it makes it taste better, but it makes it cooler or whatever. But you know,
I've always looked at it as timepieces, right? These are little time capsules of stuff from a time and place, and often an era that is not available to you. That Havana Club is not available here.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Right? So you're getting a little piece from a different part of the world that you wouldn't have here.
Like when I, for example, I would use when I went to Balvenie, and so we have the Balvenie 50 at the restaurant, and I'm hanging out with David C. Stewart, which if you don't know who David Stewart is, like, he is the malt master. He's Sir David Stewart.
And he was in Eurythmics, which was...
That's a different David. Unrelated.
That might be a different David.
Allegedly. Yeah. But so, you know, getting to meet a guy who has worked for the company for 58 years.
Absolute legend.
But to shake the hand of the guy, I mean, I'm talking to this guy, and he literally was involved in the making of the 50-year-old juice that's in the bottle at the restaurant that I worked at
50 years ago. Yeah.
I mean, that's when you talk about time capsule stuff, I mean, that's just nuts to think about, you know?
There would be no reason for you to meet this guy if it wasn't for spirits.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like the fact that he's been doing this for 60 years almost.
Yeah. He's, they knighted him. He was so important to malting grains. I mean, knighted. That's crazy.
You know, one of the cool things we got to do one time up at B&B is you had, I don't know if you call it an employee meeting or whatever, but you had all your servers sit down and try the different spirits, and then you were telling the stories behind them and everything like that. So you're actually educating everybody up there about it. And your staff is very knowledgeable about it. That's a really cool thing.
Well, and that's important. You know, and I'll probably address this in the opening, but it's important that if you're going to be in a bar selling spirits, that you know what you're talking about.
Oh, yeah. I can't tell you how many times I went to craft beer places with a huge wall of beer, and they go, well, what do you like? And I say, well, I like malty. And they say, well, we have an IPA.
Yeah, and that's it's important. And then the reverse of that, though, is that even when you become knowledgeable, I get a bit frustrated. Even today, I got into an argument over gin with Chris Morris about...
Chris Morris doesn't argue with people. No way. What are you talking about?
Chris Morris arguing over a spirit?
Well, it bothers, and I'll say this in the opening, but it bothers me how quickly people within the industry are to dismiss what they perceive to be the general public. But also, we've all been to those bars that you say, I'm looking for something, like you said, malty, something, or maybe smoky, and they hand you a rum or something, and you're like, well, that's not what I meant. I meant like peated, and like, oh, peated, like Macallan. Like, no, Macallan's not peated.
You're right. But, right.
You know, so
but it says scotch. It has to have peat. Yeah. It says single malt scotch on the bottle.
It's important to note that what makes you a nerd or an expert in any field has nothing to do with it being your job. It has to do with you making that effort to become educated in that realm. Now, it helps when it's your daily job, right? Because you don't tend to forget stuff. But, you know, it's...
Definitely, but I mean,
it's passion, right?
I was gonna say, for me, more I've probably learned more off the clock than on the clock, just from the perspective of, you know, taking time to, like, you know, like I always, you know, recommend people read the Complete Book of Spirits by Anthony Diaz Blue. You know, like, that's, I read that book on my honeymoon. You know what I mean? Like that's when you're a nerd and, you know, you find yourself in these strange moments, immersing yourself in this, like, as opposed to doing something. That's, you know, I could be on a jet ski, or I could be reading about, like, the history of, like, the vodka revolution of the 1700s.
That's nerd with all capitals, by the way.
Sure. And a couple of periods after each letter, just really underline it.
Yeah.
We've got to take a quick break, but I'll end this note with one more thing. One of the greatest Hall of Famers, Bourbon Hall of Famers, is Jimmy Russell, right? Wild Turkey Jimmy Russell. He's a legend in the industry. He's been doing this between him and his son over 100 years. Some crazy number, right? He was the master distiller for Wild Turkey for many years, and he's been quoted as saying things as silly as, you know, it's not bourbon if it's not from Kentucky, or it has to, you just because something is your job does not mean you're right.
Absolutely.
Although it helps if it's your job to be right.
Right. Agreed.
So
if it's your job, it's more important that you be
sure,
right.
Absolutely. Sure. And that happens like with our all the regulations around anything are available online to right. anyone, to my 3-year old. If she knew how to read and could look up the internet.
And that's even something that I tell people. It's like learning to read labels.
Sure.
Like, you know, actually, like, you know, and I first learned about that as I was going through becoming, you know, a psalm. Is that what's on that paper matters, because people make rules as to what you can put on it. So being able to decipher that helps you have a head start.
I'll give an exception. Stuff like the sommelier, it's your job, but also you had to hit.
Oh yeah.
You know, but you know, people can be wrong regardless. But just because what drives me nuts in any realm is when someone speaks from a place of false authority. It's actually a very common debate. Trope, right? So there's several different falsehoods when it comes to debate. And when people say things like, oh, I'm a teacher, so I know let me think of a better example. I work at a brewery, so therefore I must be correct. But they have no certification. They have no, they just pour in the tap room, mm-hmm. right? Or yeah. something, you know what I mean? And that's not to downplay anyone who's right. It's to downplay those who think they're right just because even when they're wrong, that sort of thing. Does that make sense?
Right.
I don't want to take away from those who have earned it, who are educated, who, when they speak, what they're saying is true. But when you speak and what you're saying is not true and you can't provide any backup and your backup is, I do this for a living, that's not a backup.
Well, that doesn't quantify.
If we go back to my earlier statement where I was giving him kudos about educating his staff, versus the staff that I've run into where I ask for one thing and they're like, told the opposite. Well, how about this? That's not necessarily on the employee. I think that's on the management. I think management should be making sure, you know, at an establishment that your employees know what they're talking about if they're serving this.
Yes and no. So your job is as a management in that role, absolutely. You gotta, you know, they need to know the menu. Of course, like, but I think like kind of a good way to say this is like, it's one thing to know what whiskeys are on the spirit list, right? It's a menu. You
mm-hmm.
should
sure.
look at it, right, you can right. learn it. You can say, it's, you know, okay, boom, boom, boom. It's great. It's grouped by, you know, regions, you know, single malts are here. American rye and blendeds are here. Bourbons are here. You can learn that, but that doesn't mean that just because you've learned the names on it, right? So you could walk in and that server can say, okay, I know because this is an Isla in the single malt. He asked for smoky. This is what I've been taught to give is smoky.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean you know what makes it smoky or what peat is. Right. Or, you know, so
I'll give you a perfect example. I work in aviation. My day job has been for almost 10 years. I work and I'm considered a master operational specialist. That's actually my title, which sounds a bit douchey to say master. That does not make me an expert on a jet engine. I deal with private flights constantly. Harrison Ford, Obama, Oprah, their clients. It does not mean that if we're having a discussion about how the plane gets lift and takes off, it doesn't mean I know what I'm. It's a false sense of authority. When you say things like, I've been doing this for this amount of years, I work in aviation, you're wrong, that's not a supporting argument. That's not proof. That's not, it's not anything.
You know, we do a podcast, Smoking and Toasting, where we talk about beers and spirits and cigars.
Sure.
And I'm wrong on it all the time.
I'm wrong on this all the time.
Because, you know, just because I have a little bit of knowledge there doesn't mean I'm always going to get it right. What I love about our show is because we do it Facebook Live every time we do the show, there's running comments. And fortunately for us, the commenters are not at all shy about
it. No, not at all.
Sure. No, that's not right. It's this. And we actually go back and try to correct ourselves.
Speaking of wrong,
as possible.
Speaking of wrong, have you seen the way this guy pours beers?
Oh, here we go. Here we go.
That's one way to make that segue. Yeah, you know, let me say something on the Chris Morris thing in his defense real quick. Chris is an expert in many realms. I think most of my frustration when we argue stems from him. Now, this could be for many reasons, but it starts with, I think, him misunderstanding what I'm trying to say, which could and often does come from how I word the initial statement, right? So if I make the statement, and this is basically how this argument went earlier, I said, I don't like salt on my apples. And he's like, well, then don't put salt in your apples. I'm like, I know. I'm not going to put salt on my apples. I said I didn't like salt on my apples. And then he says, well, then don't put it on there. I know. I said, like, that's exactly how this happens. It's like,
calmer newer.
He kind of misunderstands what I'm trying to say and kind of makes a leap to what he thinks the point I'm making. But I think that stems from maybe how I word some things. But often, I will also say that it doesn't mean that I'm always wording it wrong. It just means that you're interpreting it wrong. But that also means... that I hate you and go fuck yourself. I'm just kidding. We'll just censor that out. It's like the beer thing. The whole beer thing. I had simply said that I aggressively pour to release more carbonation, to not be full, because I have one beer. I had a fourth of a beer right now, and I'm feeling a bit already kind of, you know, spirits. I sip. I pee 15 times. I'm fine. But with beer, I pour too much and I get full. And by too much, I mean one beer, like one 16-ounce can of our coconut thing that we did with Southern Star. I'm full, slightly buzzed. But when I aggressively pour, it just and it's as simple as that. You release more carbonation when you aggressively pour. Does that mean that that's the right way to pour? Does that mean that that's how everyone should pour?
No, I of course was teasing you about the wrong way to pour, because obviously I put a couple chips of ice in my whiskey earlier and you didn't snarl at me or anything.
No, drink it how you like it.
Yeah, exactly. So my only downside to that is a beer is generally carbonated to what that brewer thinks is going to make the flavor
dance the best. It's actually more than that. When brewers carbonate, they know it may sit in the can for a certain amount of time. They tend to add more in the can than what's necessarily needed for longevity of shelf life.
Which is why I generally like it in a glass better anyway.
Sure.
However, which releases some of it, but at the same time, pouring hard like that. Now, some beers you pour hard. If you have something on nitro, you're going to pour it a little harder. And Guinness, you just dump in the glass and pour as hard as possible.
Sure.
To make it do its thing. So the only side to that argument I would even put out there is, first off, drink how you like it. I was joking about pouring it wrong, but the only downside to that is that whole carbonation factor is there so that the beer tastes the way it's supposed to taste,
right?
As per the brewer's vision
of
the beer.
Let me counter that. Since when, ever in the history of anything, is that brewer's opinion of how he thinks it should? Now that may be what he was going for. But when I go to a restaurant and I order a steak, I have the option to order it however the frick I want. You think that chef's going to get his feelings hurt if I do it well done? Sure. Absolutely. If I'm sitting at a table next to someone who orders it well done, I may be passing judgment on them for ordering it well done. But
well,
people
first of all, I disagree with this, because if you're a chef and you still have feelings, I don't believe you're actually a chef.
you're not a real – you haven't been doing it for very long anyway.
But the way that
it's great to have him on the show.
Yeah. The way a brewer intends his thing to be presented does not trump the way that you want to enjoy it. Just no more than you adding ice to that spirit. And no more – and we mentioned this off air – I've got a buddy who had an organ transplant. He can't have steak rare. It has to be well done. He can't have steak rare. It has to be well done to prevent any chance that a bacterial infection, meaning that there's often a reason why someone might do it a certain way that may not be the way that person intended it, but I could not buy your beer if that's the alternative. I have to drink it your way or I can't buy it at all. Okay.
There's a lot of beer out there.
Yeah, there's a lot of beer out there. You know, I think Miller Lite's available.
And as somebody who actually sells hooch, you know, for a living.
There's a couple of us here that sell hooch for a living.
You can't.
Some of us drink it for a living.
Well, that's
true.
Some of us do both. But you can't. I love this that this has actually come up, because it's the whole adage of the right way.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, for example, let's talk about one of the 50 years, right? Pick one. I don't care. Or the Lady Byrne 42, whatever. Really old,
sure,
very exclusive whiskey. When I bring that to the table, you're going to have on the tray with the glass, you're going to have a Glencairn, you're going to have, sure, a rocks glass, you're going to have a rocks glass of ice, some club soda, some water. If you care for it, a soft drink. Because at the end of the day, my job is to put the best whiskey that I can on my shelf and educate you enough that hopefully you'll be intrigued by it and buy it. Then once you buy it, that's not up to me, you know?
We can, yes, absolutely. We can argue. My cup is, actually, I think it's that one. We can argue over when it's just a matter of opinion, but if there's a legit reason why someone might do something, you know, like, I don't want to feel bloated, so I... And then you have an issue with that? Get over yourself. And you know what I really wanted to do, and I wish I had put some thought into this? I want to do it on your show next time I come by, because I heard Alan Denny was on recently. So I've got a reason to come back.
I think he's up on you, actually.
Yeah. I'm sure he heard, because he texted you like 50 times going, I'm ahead of you, I'm ahead of you.
We had lunch, and all he did, he only wanted to have lunch. We have lunch every now and again, but this particular lunch was just so he could tell me face-to-face that he was on the show. But I want to do this on your show next time I come see you guys. I want to have a blind taste test where I pour you guys all the same beer, blind. So four beers, or if you come on, six beers. Same beer, aggressively poured in one glass, blindfold both of you, properly pour in another glass, and tell me if you can tell the difference. Now, I know that, yes, when you release more carbonation, it's going to be a bit flatter sooner than expected, but not immediately. I think if you aggressively pour, I've noticed that I'm less bloated. It still tastes great. I'm still happy as a consumer. And I'm not saying I have the best palate in the world, but I'm willing to bet that blindfolded, neither one of you guys, especially you for some reason, I want to see something about you.
Why are you, your eyes are just shooting daggers at me right now. I'm going to do this. Hold on. Snip.
Would not be able to say that one tastes bad. Are we on the second already? No. Yeah, we are or not? Okay. Would not be able to, even if you were to tell a minutia, you'd still be able to say that this is a damn good beer. And we'll choose your favorite beer. Tell me your favorite beer. I'll get four of them. Or I guess I would just need two of them, half pour. But aggressively pour one with a fat head on it. Let it settle. It only takes about a minute to settle. Let you guys taste it. And tell me if you think this one's worse than this one. And if you both can recognize, doesn't matter, because the point is I did it for a reason. Yeah. Like, it's the way I like to drink it.
Let me talk about this. It's a moot point anyway,
because beer is good.
Well, yes. Let me say a couple things. First of all,
it's like cold pizza.
Yeah,
first of all, they intended it, but it's fantastic.
You're welcome on the show anytime. And by the way, one of the beers you brought on the show, I don't know, maybe like second time you were on, has not only made repeat visits to the show, but it's become one of my personal favorites.
Ghost.
And now I have seen it featured in a whole national thing about being one of the like best IPAs in the country. Ghost and that's in Ghost in the Machine from Parrish Brewing.
Absolutely.
And I was so thrilled to see it getting that kind of recognition. So, yeah, you're welcome to bring beers on the show anytime.
Yeah.
Secondly, with regards to this whole thing about how you like to pour your beer, or even, quite frankly, what spirits you like or what brands you prefer, what kind of flavors you prefer. I kind of grew up in the business as a radio person, and I worked many like wonderful years at an indie rock station, and it was one of the best jobs that I had in radio. It was a lot of fun. I loved playing I really liked that music to begin with. I just loved being able to play, you know, play and explore as much new music as we were able to. But the thing that I thought drove me crazy was the music snobs. They would, as soon as a band became popular, they weren't good anymore. And in fairness,
you mean objectively not good, or
no?
Just
I mean to this person, the snob.
Oh,
as soon as their friends liked the band,
as a kid who moved to Washington like State the band in the anymore. Summer of 1990, I fully understand this metaphor.
Remember Nickelback. Yeah. I remember Nickelback was at the top of its game. You remember Spider-Man early 2000s?
Sure.
Nickelback was killing it. And then they became this huge joke.
They
Green Day.
Right.
Dookie was amazing.
Well,
39 Smooth.
But then they just became this tween band. And
I just want to point out, I don't like either one of those bands when they came out. So.
Neither did I.
Green Day was great
when they were still punk. But Nickelback never worked.
And I used to say this to people, like what you like. If you really don't like a band's later work as much as their earlier work, that's great. But like what you like. Don't like what you think you're supposed to like.
Sure.
And I think that same thing applies in the world that we're inhabiting here. Man, if you like, you know, Pabst Blue Ribbon, then enjoy Pabst Blue Ribbon.
I like a good PBR on a hot day.
I was about to say, as someone who spends a lot of time with high-end alcohol, I will openly tell you, like, my beverage of choice, when I sally up to the bar at my local, which I will probably go to after this because it's very close to here, the good old Ron's Pub. But, you know, it's funny because people tell me all the time, like, oh, I want to go with you and I want to drink your favorite whiskey where you go. And I'm like, no, you don't. I go to a dive bar and I drink really cold Lone Star and lukewarm Bushmills in a dirty glass. Like, that's it. Like, to me, that's heaven.
Which Bushmills?
White.
Okay. We're on the same page.
Yeah. Are we live? We're talking about the pear brandy?
Yeah. Now we're talking about the pear brandy.
Okay. So
this is a bit divisive.
I want to ask you some questions about this. Obviously, it's aged.
Yep.
11 years.
I got into brandy not really understanding much about it.
Her music's pretty good.
Right? I really loved the TV show. I thought there was a lot of depth.
He was upstairs in his room. And
No, it's crazy. So I worked with a guy when I was at Masraps.
That was a brandy song.
Named Claudio.
I don't know.
And this guy would go back to Romania every couple of years to spend time with his family. And his father made this amazing white plum brandy.
Okay.
And, I mean, it was rocket fuel. I mean, he would bring me this little plastic 20-ounce water bottle, you know, full of it that he smuggled through, you know, I mean, allegedly. Through wherever he smuggled it. And I mean, it was hot and it was wonderful and just really, really completely different from what I expected from the term brandy. And then I sort of went down, you know, as I tend to do when I find a weird spirit, the rabbit hole with it. And so I'm really intrigued by this because I absolutely adore the overproof brandies. But I don't know that I've ever had one that has been aged for 11 years.
Yeah. So when it comes to American distilling history, Americans think bourbon, right? But
sure.
Brandy is actually has a deep history in America. And one of the few brandy distillers, there's a bunch of people making brandy in the U.S. I don't mean to undersell it. Chris Morris, calm down, thinking, oh, there's tons of brandy. But Copper and Kings out of Louisville opened a brandy distillery. I've had Joe on. We've been huge supporters of them here in Houston. We've done a couple of brandy. We've done three brandy barrels, two gin barrels. We're huge fans of just the weird, right? I want my spirits to be as colorful as Cruz's shirt over there. I want.
I got in the elevator with this guy with a tie on. And he says to me, oh, day off? I go, no, it's a work day. And he gave me this look about how much he hated me.
Yeah.
No, but you're absolutely right, I think, about brandy. And now I'm going to do one of those things where I'm going to say something, and it might be one of those wrong things.
Sure.
So you guys can correct me.
It's definitely wrong.
But wasn't brandy at one time before the whiskey sort of explosion, wasn't it the most popular and oft-consumed,
I believe so.
Spirit in the U.S.
It was our early distilling history was brandy, and,
yeah.
and we've Americans even have a history with rum going back a long
yeah.
way.
Yeah, well, and a big part
with
brandy, especially like you know with the rage of cocktail culture. I mean, a lot of those original cocktails were made with brandies and cognacs. Your Sazeracs, you know, things like that. So there's definitely like a rich history there. But I mean, you're talking brandy and Madeira go back. Like George Washington and Thomas Jefferson were making brandy and Madeira. Like,
sure.
You know, I mean, that's just, if you had corn, you were eating it. You know, I mean, it just wasn't, I don't know. But the history is kind of lost, I think.
Well, I think what the reason why our bourbon boom has been what it was is because of the, I think that at least, let me be very careful with my words. I think a portion of it has to do with corn and the way that the government has subsidized corn. We have been such a corn country that we don't know what to do with it. We put it in our orange juice. We put it in our soda. We put it in everything. There's corn in everything. High fructose corn syrup in everything.
Except for the Medio Litros in my fridge.
If I could just say, after tasting this, though, I believe that I'm going to petition my senator to see if the government will subsidize pears. This is delicious.
It's crazy, right? It's super cool.
Wonderful.
This right here has like the age comes through on it. That oak kind of age dryness on the end really makes a big difference.
I'm going to send this to Joe. I'm almost positive these are about 11 years old.
Yeah. Sure.
He got his hands on about 10 barrels, give or take.
I'm going with it's not Joe filtered.
Not yet. Well, if you read the bottle, they don't add anything to it. They don't dress it up. They don't.
Oh, you're right. I read the bottle. Not Joe filtered.
And he lets you pick your proof, which is one of the few things I love about this distillery. Is you try something, if you want it to be 80 proof, or if you want it to be cask strength 130 proof, he'll let you do it however you want. And he is, you know, I asked him. I was like, does it hurt your feelings when people water it down too much? He's like, a little bit, but people should be able to enjoy it the way that they enjoy it. And if I had known, and Joe, I'm going to send this to you. If I had known that pear brandy was available when we first did our pick, we would have grabbed two barrels. I think it may not be for everyone, but I don't think it's that divisive. When I drink it, I love it. And we did a game night a week ago. We're playing this Lord of the Rings board game with a couple of friends of mine. And you do it in chapters. So once a week we get together and we've been playing.
Fighting off the ladies with a stick.
We drank through an entire bottle, four of us, in one night, and just playing a board game over a five-hour period. It was just stunningly cooked pears, the barrel influence. Everything about it was just tasty to me. I just loved every drop.
It's been crazy since the first drink. Like, there's a lot going on in this. And, like, I like exactly what Cruz said. Like, there's, like, a pronounced playfulness between the pear and the wood. Like, you very much get distinctive notes of both. Nothing's lost. Even though I'm drinking it cold, like, which that's, you know, I'm not drinking it neat, but.
So, you know, what I tend to do is make sure my mic's on. What I tend to do is add just a little bit of ice because I like to taste it cold, and then I like to taste as it warms up with a little bit of water in it.
You're wrong. I'm just kidding.
I know. I'm totally wrong, right? Did you notice I poured that last beer for you very hard?
Appreciate
it. Poured that beer so hard. Health.
Although it's a barley wine, so you can pour it any way you want.
You know what sucks, too? When you say the word bloating to a nerd, to a snob, I was like, I do it because I don't want to bloat. They're like, well, then take some Mitol and chill out. I was like, man, screw you.
Come on.
It's like I set myself for the perfect insult. I was like, man, like, that's a really good joke.
Well, that's okay. What you should have said is I will, and I'll wash that Mitol down with my 130 proof booze.
This is fun because the very first sip, when it was very cold with the little ice that I put in there, it came across with a little less of the sweetness, and now it's warming up a little bit. The sweetness is coming through in the front, but it's not a cloying stick to you sweetness. It's got that aged barrel flavor that's so good in the background. I'm for it.
You know, I want to bring something up if I could. All four of us are people that derive great enjoyment from spirits.
Drugs? Spirits. And, that's what I was going to say. Yeah.
From spirits and also from craft beer.
Allegedly.
And I just keep reading all these articles about how alcohol consumption is down. All the major craft brewers are looking at coming up with non-alcoholic, you know, products that they can, you know, put out to kind of stay up with the marketplace. And that millennials in particular are drinking less alcohol. And, you know, I don't want to be the guy that is the pro booze guy. But at the same time, like, you have to wonder, like, what are we not doing to get the this generation of people? I don't know. I know a lot of it's health based, and I get that. But to be able to have an occasional cocktail or something wonderful to drink, it's just an experience that I hate to see a generation of people miss out on because they think they can't moderate.
No, I don't think that's the case. I think right now we have a mixed problem of saturation and trying to maintain a profitable business when the pie is continually being divided up with each new craft brewer, each new craft distillery. We are seeing bourbon seeing a ton of growth. Rum is seeing a ton of growth. We are seeing a resurgence in many of these areas. And sure, there's going to be people who are young who don't drink. Our producer doesn't drink.
But and beer is down, but craft beer is up. So,
sure.
You know, what that means is that the people who are drinking the more interesting and flavorful things are actually increasing. The people who are drinking more of the mainstream drinks are decreasing. But
absolutely.
At the same time, I just I would hate to think, you know, I get a couple of, you know, stepsons, and I introduce them to new things that I get, and it's a bonding family experience when I go, hey guys, you got to check out this whiskey that I got, and pour them a little bit of it and see how they do. I mean, you know, do
and
I
what
get
they
them,
say? They're like, I'm never going to call you dad. Yeah, yeah.
No, they're awesome, but you know, the point though is that it's a thing that we enjoy together, and Ian and I love nothing more than, you know, texting each other what we call, you know, cigar porn or spirit porn.
Of course.
You know, which is what we're drinking at the time and talking about, you know, how great it is or how much we're enjoying it. I just think there's so much experience to be gained that is positive, as long as you understand moderation.
Well, I'm seeing though a trend though. You're talking about the saturation of the market, which is a big thing, and eventually that's going to peak and go down like
and
craft
settle.
Beer.
It'll settle.
Yeah,
like Bitcoin. It'll,
but like
it'll settle.
Right.
It'll settle.
But one of those things that's happening, one of the newest trends I see, is a lot of beer and spirits and you know, just generally makers like that are building these local places to hang out. They're not trying to distribute nationally necessarily. They're going, you know what, we're a local place, we're going to do this local, we'll have a beer pub local, we'll distribute local. And that's a cool thing, because then you can go out and get those local only beers, which makes it a little bit like when you go into a different town, you get to try the local stuff that's not always on your shelf everywhere else. And that's kind of a special thing too, because I've for years, you know, whenever I'm traveling to whatever city I'm in or whatever, I want to try what's local, what's fun, what's interesting. And I love the fact that my brother up in Minnesota can go into his corner store and find Shiner Bock. I think that's awesome. But
why?
But Shiner at the Bock. Same time,
it's still Shiner Bock.
Don't hate on Shiner Bock.
Shiner Bock is awesome.
Listen, just because I don't like something doesn't mean I'm a beer snob.
Okay.
But I like Shiner. I used to like Shiner.
But the fact that he can do that is cool. But at the
Shiner
same
Bock.
Time,
it's not the same. They changed the water source.
Yeah,
or something
they changed
about
everything.
10 years
it's
ago.
Not the same.
But at the same time, we'll talk about that in the next segment. How's that? All right. So, but
sorry to interrupt your show there.
But at the same time, what ends up happening is you got a lot of local places that are just making it a local thing, and they're making their brewery available, or their brew, or their distillate available locally, and you get something special about that. Like, everyone likes local stuff.
Sure.
You know, I tend to be loyal to that.
But you know the thing about that is that's the bread and butter for a lot of these places. As the pie gets divvied up with shipping and distribution of your product getting places, a lot of places make their bread and butter in their tap room.
Yes, yes.
And what they can drink on site.
Yes.
And luckily, you know, this hobby is both snobbish but also exploratory. One of the beautiful things about this hobby, and that's cigars and that's beer and that's and spirits, is you always want to try something new, something regional, something specific, something small.
It's a culture.
You know,
even.
It's a culture of trying and experimenting, and I love that about what we do. My only frustration is how we do, not what we do. You know, you love Texas whiskey, drink Texas whiskey.
Right.
But if you drink it with ice, oh, you're a bad guy. Well, you know, it's how we do gets, it still has, is a bit behind in progressive thought. Where we do and what we do is still very forward thinking.
Drink what you like and try new things. If I could put it into like one phrase, it would be that. Drink what you like, but try new things. And that's one of the great things about the craft beer industry. Ian was talking about the local thing. The latest trends in craft beer consumption are that the average craft beer consumer likes two things. They like local and they like trying something new, wherever it might be from.
And that's why tap rooms are great,
that's
too.
Awesome. Absolutely, yeah.
Because tap rooms, you'll get stuff. Even if that brewery or distillery has a tap room or has distribution, a lot of times they'll have stuff at their tap room that you can't try anywhere else. You can only get it at the tap room, and that's a beautiful and wonderful thing.
This girl I dated when in high school, her grandfather, who had been married 7 times, once told me, and I'll never forget this,
did he get good at it eventually?
Variety
as
is the
spice
of life.
As long as you get it right
the
final time.
Yeah. He wasn't referring to spirits, but but the same applies.
Chris, let me ask you this question. Because you are a much more discerning spirit drinker, and particularly whiskey, than I am.
I wouldn't say I'm discerning.
Well, I think you are.
You know how you guys get complaints of people saying you like everything?
Yeah.
I get it, too, from time to time.
Okay. Well,
I'm a bit more varietal.
So without asking you to name any names, do you find that there are spirits that you try that you go, no.
Yes.
Like, this is not good.
It actually happened on the show
every
once.
Day.
Really? So, every day? Like,
maybe not every day,
but
like,
often enough that you would put it that way.
I mean, often enough for sure that, you know, and I don't know as much about like his role in dealing with suppliers and how, you know, and what he samples. But for me, I know.
Well, you guys get pestered.
Well, I have a horrible, horrible reputation amongst liquor reps in this town. They all hate me.
That's not true.
Well,
there's the one worse than you. There's two worse than you, and one left the industry last year.
So you're the second worst now.
I'm moving right up the ladder, you know? But
you know, no one's going to say he's not going places, is all I'm saying.
That's right. That's right. But for me,
you got to be number one at something.
You got to know who you're bringing something to. You have to know, like, you know, somebody trying to walk into B&B and sell me flavored Ciroc vodkas. You know, you just know where you're at.
So I was just going to say that I feel like in the world of, let's say, homebrewing, for example.
Okay.
And I know you're a homebrewer. Oh, my God. That's not something
occasional.
That I do.
Oh, my God. I have something to say to that, but go ahead.
I just wanted to say, quite frankly, most of my friends who've homebrewed something and given it to me to try, it has not been good.
So going back to the aggressive.
Oh, you haven't met my friends.
Well, clearly, I mean, but you're in a whole society of people that do that and do it well. But my point is that would have to be taking place at some of these, you know, distilleries and breweries where they're coming up with stuff that just, and I don't mean just not to your palate. I mean. Not good.
It's objectively bad. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I use this to start my charcoal.
The next step up from home brewer is the guy that barely got it off the ground as a business, right? So they're it doesn't mean that they perfected anything in their craft. It means they had enough money to start home brewing on a larger scale,
right?
To buy a bigger garage with a bigger mash tun.
And that's not to crap on anybody, but in that whole discussion I had with someone through PM over the aggressive beer pouring, he said to me, and to this day, I can't help but. You know when you get excited and as you start talking, your voice kind of raises an octave, you know?
Stop yelling
I don't know
at me,
about
Chris.
You, but I do.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I just like, I can't believe he said that to me. Like, he said the words, I've been home brewing for years. I know what I'm talking about.
Now we're back to segment one.
I was just about to say segment one.
I could not.
I do this for a living.
Now we're back to segment one.
Yeah, I couldn't believe the words coming out of. Imagine saying that with whiskey. I've been distilling in my garage, moonshine. So I'm here to tell you that
Booker No doesn't know nothing.
Correct.
I
can't believe he said that to me.
For those who
make sense.
For those who think that we like everything, I was traveling once through the middle of Texas, and I ended up at a rum distillery.
Most of Texas, by the way, is the middle of Texas.
Yes. And I ended up at this rum distillery, and they're like, and we got to chat, and you know, I told them about my podcast and everything, and we're like, well, we'll give you a bottle of this, and maybe you could review it on the show. I was like, okay, maybe. And then I went home and tried it.
Oh, no.
It's never made it to the show.
Yeah.
You
know what sucks?
It is like, I literally,
sometimes
like,
sometimes you gotta bring stuff on the show that you're gonna give a negative review.
No, I try not to do that. I try not to be a negative person, you know?
It's hard. You have to get to a point where you're established enough that you don't rely, that you're not going to scare off either sponsors or brands. There's like this weird bubble that you have to live in for a while until you get to a point that you don't need them enough to be able to speak your mind freely. It's a weird thing, but yeah, it's a matter of fact.
Okay, but my thought...
There's a matter of respect. Like, you know, people start to respect your palate. Like,
but my thought is this.
Agreed.
Know? Why would I intentionally bring something onto the show that I know I'm going to trash? Yeah. I'm not that guy. I'm not going to...
I have two words for you.
I said shit.
Malort.
Yeah. Okay, that was funny.
Okay,
I almost brought the bottle of Malort to put it here on the table. By the way,
pretty sure that's one word, but okay.
but like, and the whole people like trashing Malort, like it is what it is, man. Like
nobody ever took
a shot of Malort thinking they were expecting like
Ian did
know,
totally trick
angel
me with
juice.
Malort. In fairness.
Yeah, that was one of those. No, don't worry about it. I got the whiskey this week. Or I got the spirit this week.
Okay, so that's a little different.
What was your question that you asked me that I said I'd answer?
I was just talking about when you've tried things that really just aren't good.
How do I approach it?
Yeah, well, not just how do you approach it, but how often does that happen?
Oh, I mean, it happens. Here's the thing, though. I don't think that I like everything, but I have actively striven, and I'll tell you whose fault it is. It's Pasha Mercedes.
Stravinsky.
Nice.
There are a few people in the city that their bars may be known for whiskey or beer or something, but they have made a conscious effort to carry a diverse selection of all spirits that have inspired me to strive to be, because that's how I got started. When I was 18, 19 years old. I was talking to this really pretty girl I met through MySpace, right?
So she was from your past?
And she was a little older than me, and she said, do you like wine? And I said, oh, I love wine. I had never drank wine. I had no idea what wine tasted like.
Of course I like wine.
And she's like, well, you want to come over to the house? My parents are cool if we have a bottle of wine. So I was like, yeah. I'll pick up a good bottle of wine. I'll be over there, you know, Tuesday or whatever. And I had never tasted wine. I had no idea what to expect, but I wanted to impress this pretty girl. A few glasses in, I really liked it. I mean, I drank at that time, right? It was mostly Jack and Coke, which is, there's nothing wrong with that. But I was very inexperienced in drinking. I married that woman. That's my wife right now. And
it must have been a decent bottle of wine.
By the way, her parents very much cared that I was 18 years old coming over with a bottle of wine. Her parents were not happy. But I remember that thought of like, man, I want to actively strive to try things and learn to appreciate, because all of alcohol, every category, whether it's tequila, mezcal, brandy, bourbon, Armagnac, they have hundreds of years of a mass following encompassing millions of people. So there's got to be something to it. And I've adopted that belief when it comes to food. I've adopted that belief when it comes to cigars. I'm like, okay, there's something to this. I just need to adjust my palate. I need to approach it objectively. I need to learn about it before I just say, ooh, it's not my thing, right? I nothing is more irritating, and I don't know if you – I hope this doesn't insult you guys. But as an adult, I'm not a picky eater, and nothing drives me more nuts than when I meet someone who's a picky eater as an adult, because my children are picky eaters. And when you tell me, oh, I don't like tomatoes. You don't like tomatoes? Why? What is that? I don't understand. Now, okra is slimy and it has like spit. Like when you bite into okra, there's like...
But see, I love okra.
That's kind of when it's cooked wrong, by the way.
I like okra too. My point was simply that there are people I meet as adults in their 40s who won't drink coffee because it tastes nasty. You're 45 years old. What are you doing with your life? Coffee is fantastic. Like, I don't want to be that person that is a picky anything. So when I find something fascinating, like some tequilas and mezcals are mind-blowingly interesting.
Mind-blowingly interesting.
Rum, like, and so I've, because of places like Rosewater and Clear Lake and 8 Row Flint, Morgan Weber, I've been to their bars that are known for whiskey and cocktails, and you go in and you see literally 1,000 bottles on the back bar that encompass all these different categories, and it's like being in a – and they do half pours, right?
Sure.
So if you want to go in there and you want to try 20 things, you can do it safely without breaking any laws, but you can also jump through different countries all in one sitting, and that to me is just so inspiring.
Well, so I think there's a funny thing that happens with...
How do you not like tomato? I'm just kidding.
There's a funny thing that happens. Like, there are a lot of people out there who go for the homogenized drinking thing, meaning this is the one that I drink. This is what I drink every day. This is the 12-pack I buy, no matter what. And that, to me, is mind-boggling because I'm not always in the mood for that. I want to try different things.
Right.
But I think what a lot of people have a problem with is they get so used to drinking, say, for instance, Dr. Pepper. Okay? They get so used to drinking Dr. Pepper that if they accidentally take a sip of Sprite, they're like, oh, that's gross. But it's not because it's actually gross. It's because they didn't give it a chance, and they have that knee-jerk reaction. Sure. So they taste it once, and they go, ah. And they're not doing what you're talking about, where you sit down and you go, you know what? There's something about this.
This is different. This is not bourbon.
Let's try this, and let's see if there's something about it I like. And then if there's something about it I like, maybe my palate will develop towards that.
So you're saying I will one day wind up liking Malort?
Yes. You drink enough Malort.
Look, some stuff is objectively bad, okay? Some stuff is objectively bad, we can accept that.
Okay, but I think this is actually an interesting fork in the road with spirits as well, though, because there are spirits out there or shots or whatever that happen, especially in the craft world, that are almost taken because they're just sort of... they're bad to the normal layman's palate, so the craft palate says, oh, they're ours, like shots of Campari, right? I have had a gajillion shots of Campari. Never once have I taken a shot of Campari.
That will leave some dryness in your mouth, by the way.
You know, it's not like I've never gotten off work. Like for example, you know, I get off work. It's been a 14-hour day during restaurant weeks, and I get to the pub, and I'm like, man, there's that cold Lone Star, and that shot of Bushmills hits, and the burn. You're like, oh. Like, I just washed work right out of my mouth.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Whereas a shot of Campari, I'm not trying to insult people who love shots of Campari, but I don't feel like there's that, like, sort of, like...
relief?
You know, occipital release, you know, that you're
release. That's the name of the episode.
Nice.
And my next band.
My wife's going to thank me for that.
Occipital release.
But no, delving into, like... flavor profiles that maybe you initially didn't like, but you realized there was something too. Like, I'll give you the example for me. Like, I detest black licorice.
Oh, I love licorice.
Hear me out. So I do not like black licorice. However, I was actually in New Orleans, and I was with Peter Clifton and Chris Moore. I can't this year. Lots of projects in the fire, but I was actually there with Peter Clifton and Chris. And, you know, Chris and I ended up at the Absinthe House
And Peter showed up.
Which, by the way, I'm going to tell you, like, I learned so much working with that guy. Like, he, for good, bad, I don't care what anybody else's opinion. The guy is a wellspring.
Let me say something.
However, sometimes it's hard to get to the knowledge because he's berating you.
Sure.
Well, if you can get him to show up, he's actually very knowledgeable.
Oh, did he stand you up on the show?
Oh, what would make you think that?
I didn't know about that.
But weren't we talking about a bar potentially called No Call, No Show?
Three times.
There's a reference there. So what I'm getting at, though, so I took this flavor that I wasn't a fan of, but there was this spirit that had this incredible history in Absinthe.
Sure.
And I found myself
really
enjoying the history lesson that was learning of Absinthe, so right? In the story.
How did that affect your actual taste perception?
In the beginning, I kind of had to force myself to drink something that I was like, but then what happens is you realize, like, wait a minute, not all absinthe is just this black licorice bomb. You know, there are Swiss absinthes that are far more botanical as opposed to, you know, the French absinthes, and there's Morthouillon or barrel aged or white, or, I mean, there's this litany of things that go into it. And what I realize is kind of when you talk about there's something to this, obviously. If this spirit has had this rich storied history and it had all this there's something there, you know, controversy makes curiosity. And so what I end up doing is going, you know, again, it's like aquavit and absinthe and Amaros are probably the three heaviest rabbit holes I went down in my exploration of spirits.
You love aquavit.
I love aquavit. But when it came to the absinthe thing, I really figured out, like, wait a minute, like, there is something to this. And, you know, there's the absinthe frappe. There's a green beast, which is this, you know, sort of vegetal, you know, absinthe creation. There's the classic preparation, which is literally just a little sugar and water. You know, there's the Czech method of lighting on fire. But if somebody took the time to go through all these processes and
have something to it,
there's something going on. You know, if people think, you know, that it has this Don Quixote-esque effect. You know, I mean, there's something there that's worth exploring. I mean, even if at the end of it, you're like, cool, I'm going to turn the car back around and go back to the beginning of this road and pick a different spirit. But, like, you go down it because there's a reason to go down it, you know? And obviously, absinthe isn't everybody's cup of tea. Bourbon's not everybody's cup of tea, but you...
Well, hold on. You know, I'm just kidding.
Well,
you know,
I mean, it's true.
You know, like, my first scotch was Glenlivet. Just a 12-year-old.
I apologize.
Which tastes like apples. if you ask me. And I don't think it's bad. You say I apologize. Well,
the same way about Jameson.
I'm kidding.
But that opened me into a world of, wow, I kind of like this scotch thing. And I started trying different scotches. And it took a while, but I'm now the guy that has the quarter cask Laphroaig and has no problem with that. Now, to put that in perspective, one of my wife's friends came over a few years back, and she's like, what are you drinking? I said, well, I'm drinking a scotch. And she goes, can I try it? I said, sure. And the look on her face and the fact that she said, that tastes like poison.
Yeah. What did you make this with, Band-Aids?
The best poison that's ever been put into a bottle.
Is this Ace Bandage like, tea?
So, yeah, you start learning to experience different things.
The palate does develop. I mean,
yeah,
that's
it develops,
true.
And you learn to
when we first started this show, I didn't get peated scotch.
I remember that, yeah.
And since, what are we, 147 episodes now of
You've grown.
Smoking and Toasting, I've learned to appreciate it. It's still not my favorite style. Right. But if you pour me something good, I'm going to enjoy it. And that's the development of a palate.
I did throw you in a little head first with the Ardbeg, though.
You did.
And I think
there's probably a good quality way to do it.
They have a cult following.
Oh, well, Ardbeg is amazing,
it's so
man.
Good.
Huge Ardbeg fan.
The Kelpie, all their crazy weird releases.
That.
But, you know, what I think
it?
Is also
Eugenol?
Cool.
Is that what you said?
Eugenol and vanillin are probably more prevalent than in bourbons and ryes. But they are part of the aging process. But one thing I like, and you know, you've hit on it, is the cool thing about these divisive sort of spirits or this, oh, I don't like that. But at least there's a feeling.
Sure.
To me, there's nothing worse than when I taste a spirit and it's just like.
It's just kind of okay.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
It's vanilla.
Yeah.
Vanilla in the metaphorical sense.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's boring.
Oh, yeah, this,
not notes of vanilla, but.
Shocking. Sure. This tastes like caramel, vanilla, and a little fig.
Let me clarify something. I want to say two things and then we have to wrap up. In Chris's defense, I am a huge Chris Morris fan. I love the guy.
Oh, yeah. We
Which
all,
is I, why you bashed him several times.
Correct.
On the show.
Yes. And I don't want this episode to come off as me shitting on the guy. I do love Chris. My frustration stems from a bit of a misunderstanding and a disconnect between the hospitality industry and often the hospitality arrogance that comes with it and the consumer who, if it feels like for some that it's like you don't deserve respect if you're just a hobbyist,
right?
You know what I mean? And that's my frustration. So also secondly, speaking of unaged rum, you asked a question earlier, has there been something I've tasted that I didn't like that I openly almost threw up on air on my show? I had Mike Salopek on air. There's America is going through a beautiful rum
resurgence. It's
man.
Wonderful.
And there was this Haitian rum that came. It's unaged Clarin rum from Velier. I'm a huge fan of everything Velier has done. The Habitation Velier series, the aged stuff. I'm all a fan. But they have an unaged Clarin rum, a Haitian rum, that to me tastes like ham juice. Alcoholic ham juice.
Okay, ham
the
juice?
The fat kid in me is like, wait, did you say ham?
And when I tasted it on air, I wasn't expecting boozy ham.
Savory,
like,
yeah.
You know when you buy cold cuts and there's like a little bit of liquid in the bag?
I was just sitting here in my own reverie of this 21 Hibiki that no one has drank. You had one glass of, so I poured it, and I was sitting here going, it's so good. And then I heard ham juice, and I went, what?
There's this thing that happens with cold cuts where they sweat a little bit, and that all the nitrates and stuff they're pumped with kind of remnants in the bag of like a wetness. And there's like a boozy equivalent of
all,
that.
All the reasons my pregnant wife can't eat them.
Yeah, and I wasn't a fan, and it caught me off guard on air.
By the way.
Oh, wait, she's pregnant now?
Yes, yeah, 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 my first, yeah, my wife's
wow.
January 20th.
Babe.
Bro, man.
So, yeah.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
So I was caught off guard. I was caught off guard with ham right here, buddy. Someone who has four, I'm a huge fan of kids. You know what's funny?
I'll he already has the first cobbler shaker rattler in the mail.
I'll tell you something off air, and I know we've got to go. I'll tell you something off air. It wouldn't come across on air, but kids say the darndest things. We just installed Ring cameras at the house, one in the garage over the whiskey collection and one in the front, one in the back. And I when we leave, I've started going through the garage to leave. My daughter said something to me yesterday that was, she's three, horrible if anyone else had heard it. caught me way off guard. My wife and I were like, why would you say that? And it was hilarious, objectively hilarious. Kids are amazing. And
so does this mean that if I sneak into your garage and sample your whiskeys, that you'll have me on camera?
And audio, too. Damn, yeah, it. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, and audio.
There's, well, there's at least you'll know which ones there's I like. There's an episode there.
Yeah. So they're amazing, and they're going to do horrible things, and they're going to almost die like 12 times by the time they're four. But they're so great, and I've said this 1,000 times. If I won the lottery and my wife's body could handle it, we'd have 12. So I'm super happy for you. Cheers. We've got to go. Thanks so much for coming on. I want to do this again.
Let's do it.
Maybe less shit talking for the audience. But thanks so much for coming, guys. And I really love you guys. I really mean that.
Well,
we don't get together enough. We don't see each other enough. And I want to have you back on very soon. I'm going to be recording 3 shows in New Orleans in a couple of weeks. So as soon as I get back, I want to sit down with you guys.
Come back to Smoking and Toasting as well.
Of course. Yeah, screw Alan Denny.
Also, I have to be on your show at least one more time.
Yeah, yeah. We can do that real soon. Cheers, guys. Thanks.
Cheers.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.